This meeting is now being recorded. All attendees have been muted.
Dr. Vaughn, it's Cassie. We're going to start in about 1 minute, and I just want to make sure you can still hear me.
I can hear you.
Excellent. Okay, it's 1 o'clock, so we are going to begin today. Good afternoon. My name is Cassie Pensick, a certified course facilitator with the Institute and educational consultant with Step-by-Step Learning. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today for this Straight Talk live chat conference call being sponsored by Step-by-Step Learning. Before we begin, I have some very important messages. Please mute your phone so we don't get distracted by any background noise during this session. We have also muted. If you have not done so already, please print the handouts being used today on this call from the Institute's website. The website is www.theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. Again, that is www.theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. If you have a question for Dr. Vaughn, please email it to info@tisal.org. Again, this email for questions is info@tisal.org. There are no spaces in that email address. If time allows, we will answer some of the questions that come into that email address at the end of the session. And we will also email you a complete list of questions and answers after today's call. We are ready to begin, and I want to introduce our sponsor, Step-by-Step Learning. Everyone struggles with small group instruction. The response from our advertisement in EdWeek proves that many teachers need additional support in their small group sessions. Two things that could help. One is our small group Small Group Toolkits, and the other is the Professional Development Series Connecting to the Classroom. These are just a few examples of how step-by-step learning can assist you in the small group targeted instruction needed for our most academically at-risk children. Everyone on the call today will receive a sample of the toolkit, Complements of Step-by-Step Learning. Thank you for joining us today. Today, we have the honor of being joined by Dr. Sharon Vaughn. This very special person, who needs no introduction, has spent a lifetime of research in the field of reading and the professional development of teachers. Today, Dr. Vaughn will be discussing promoting reading for understanding. This call is being recorded and will be available in the library section of the Institute for Literacy and Learning website for you and your colleagues' continuing professional development. Thank you again for joining us, and now I present to you Dr. Sharon Vaughn, presenting Promoting Reading for Understanding. Good afternoon, Dr. Vaughn.
Well, good afternoon to you and to all of the people listening on the East Coast. And if there's anybody in the West Coast, good morning. What I'm going to talk about today is to try to come up with some of the problems and solutions around reading for understanding or comprehension. Before I get started, I'll just tell you that I am a professor at the University of Texas at Austin, and I direct the Meadows Center for Preventing Educational Risk, which is an organized research unit there. And we're funded by the Institute for Education Sciences, the National Institute of Health, and other funding sources. And we disseminate research and presentations. And if you are interested in learning more about our work, you can go to our website at www.meadowscenter.org. And many of the lessons and activities that I'm talking about today will be posted there. So let's start off by thinking a little bit about reading for understanding and thinking about it from the perspective of older students. And by older students, I'm talking about students in grades 4 through 12. And here's a quote from one of those students who is at the secondary level and is reading 3 to 4 grade levels below. And the student says, "Other students raise their hands to read. They're able to pronounce the words and answer teachers' questions about reading assignments. Poor readers are like me. I tell the teacher I don't want to read because I feel embarrassed, and I think other students will laugh at me, too." The reason I started with that quote is I think most of us realize that there is a substantial number of students who, whether they missed the foundations of reading in early elementary or had adequate instruction for those foundations and have other language processing or cognitive impairments that influence their comprehension, but they struggle with reading text, understanding what they read, and learning from text. So let's just kind of do a practice. If you turn to the slide that says read this, it says, an example of the kind of optical experiment where phase differences play an important role is as follows. A beam of monochromatic light is divided into two beams by partial reflection or otherwise. The two are then sent over different paths and afterward recombined. The intensity resulting from this superposition will depend greatly on the exact phase difference between the two sets of waves. This difference in turn is determined by the distance traversed by the two beams in reaching the point of observation. So if I said to you, summarize and give me the main idea of this paragraph, how many of you think you could do it? My guess is that many of you would struggle giving the main idea of this paragraph. And it isn't because you had trouble reading the words. It isn't because you had trouble decoding the words. It isn't even because you didn't know what the words meant. You knew what kind meant, and experiment, and optical, and different paths, and partial reflection. You know what those words mean. The problem is that the background knowledge and understanding that you needed to bring to this paragraph is far beyond the background knowledge that most of us have, and therefore the text is incomprehensible. And I start with this example because I think it illustrates the challenge that many of the youngsters we work with have, which is that almost every paragraph they read relies on experiences, background knowledge, academic vocabulary, or concepts that they don't have and that prevent them from reading successfully. So what you get instead is this notion of students who just plow through text. And for many older students, everything they read makes less sense than the passage that I just read to you. And so what I mean by plowing through text is that they get through the words, they read the words, they get to the end, but they don't really know what they've read, and they're not really bringing the cognitive processing needed to understand text. Now, there's a lot of reasons why, and we can talk about what some of those are. But the most important question we have to ask is, what do we need to do as school psychologists, special educators, reading teachers, or educational leaders to change that? So one of the most important reading comprehension practices that students need to acquire is how to make an inference. So if you look at this paragraph that starts with, but for a day after the ambassadors had been sent away unseen and so impolitely, Cicero was conscious of a peculiar restlessness. Something was wrong. He didn't know what it was. He sent for Pulo and Varenus. We're in for trouble, he said. Let's walk around the camp and see what we can do to shore up its defenses. This is a really good example of a paragraph that requires the reader to make an inference. What does Cicero think might happen? Now, for those good readers listening in, which I'm sure all of you are, making this inference is not very challenging. But what's interesting is many of the students we work with, even when a paragraph like this is one they can read, meaning they can read the words, they have difficulty making inferences. And the question is why? Do they have difficulty visualizing what's going on? Do they have difficulty connecting it to previous texts they've read like this? Or do they have difficulty projecting what might happen next? So one of the things you might do is consider all three of those options as you teach students and make more explicit how they might do those practices when they read. And we find taking paragraphs like the ones I've just shown you and decomposing them through questions and asking students to bring those kinds of explicit practices to the text improves their inferencing and understanding. So questions like, what do you think is happening? How do you know it's happening? What evidence can you find from the text to support those views? Those kinds of questions are very much aligned with the questions and the kind of text-based work that we are all going to be asked to do as we implement the Common Core for reading in the next few years. So what's the larger context here when we start thinking about students with reading problems? Who are these kids? Well, we know that 32% of eighth graders are proficient readers. We know that 21 to 23% of adults demonstrate skills in the lowest level of proficiency, so that when they get into the adult work world, almost a quarter of adults still do not have the kinds of reading, writing, and understanding needed to be proficient in the workplace. We know that more than 8 million students in grades 4 to 12 are struggling readers. And we know that every day 7,000 or more students are dropping out of high school. And the trajectory for those students is not very promising. So what are some more of the facts? We have 25% of 8th graders below basic in reading. We have 26% of 12th graders. And according to the 2002 International Comparisons, the 11th graders in America are very close to the bottom in reading, with 8.7 million 4th through 12th graders unable to read and comprehend text. So the challenges are not just for post-secondary education. The challenges are not just for the workforce. But for all of us, the challenges are in fourth grade, sixth grade, eighth grade, and 10th grade. They're in the grades we're working in right now. Additionally, the annual salary expectations are really compromised, so that if you drop out of school, the salary expectations can be about $19,000. If you're a high school graduate, about $26,000. And of course, increasingly, as you become better educated, it's associated with higher income. We also know that within this larger context, only 70% of high school students graduate on time, and fewer than 60% of African American and Hispanic students do so. And high school students in the lowest 25% of their class are 20 times more likely to drop out, with 53% of high school graduates enrolling in remedial classes. So the context for these students is very discouraging, unless some significant reading interventions and programs are put in place. We know that in 1990, the USA ranked number one compared with other countries in college graduates. And by the end of the 90s, we slipped to number three, and today we're ranked 12th behind Russia, Japan, and Korea. So what are some of these causes of poor reading? And what are some of the practices we can put in place to do something about it? So some of the causes include, we know some of these students have learning disabilities and dyslexia. And these significant impairments really influence their access and success at negotiating text. We know that some students enter school with very poor preparation for learning to read. The language background, the vocabulary background, and the cognitive processes have been inadequately nurtured for success. And so we know that we have to have students making more than a year's growth in a year. We know that some students are not valuing literacy and spend very little time in literacy-related activities outside of school or outside of the demands of school. We know that some school students attend school sporadically, and so they're not getting adequate amounts of instruction. And then we know there's also some students who have generally low ability. And we know that many students have received insufficiently powerful instruction and have gotten off to a very bad start and never recovered. And that is no small problem. Once students are in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, the challenge of moving and accelerating their reading success so they can read to learn and learn from what they read is very difficult. As every child, a graduate knows that research shows that students who receive these intensive, focused reading instruction and tutoring are able to graduate from high school and attend college in significantly greater numbers than those that don't receive these kinds of interventions. And so we need to really think about how to put in place interventions that really respond to the learning characteristics of older readers and that provide this more powerful intervention that they need. For example, one of the things we know is that students need more access to print. And many of you know, as you go in the schools and you observe what goes on in social studies, science, and throughout the day, what you observe is often, rather than students using text as a source of information and knowledge, teachers are reading text to students, and of course, for good reasons. When you ask them, why are you reading text rather than having students read it, you get the inevitable answer, because they can't read it. So what we do is continue to exacerbate the problem by replacing access to text for students with teachers reading the text aloud to them. So while we want to be sure that students have access to the knowledge and therefore having adults read it to them provides that, We don't want that to circumvent the opportunity students need to practice and read more text. So let's look at this diagram that shows the older struggling readers. What you can see is that older struggling readers are ones who are going to be more like in the 10th percentile. And what you see is that the number of words read in and out of school in 1 year is about 60,000. If you're in the 50th percentile, it jumps to 900,000. And for those students who are really in the 90th percentile of reading, are really proficient readers, they read 4.1 million words in and out of school in 1 year. Now, as you look at that difference in access to print between the poorest readers and the best readers, it is very apparent to you that one of the biggest challenges we have is how do we remedy how much one learns from just having opportunities to read and engage with words. So we learn what words mean, we get better background knowledge, we become richer and fuller in our understanding about the world and its events, and we can bring that knowledge to future reading and learning so that our vocabulary, academic concepts, and background knowledge are enhanced, improving our overall reading comprehension. And we look at our poorest readers and how starved they are for access to print and words. We readily understand why their reading problems increase each year. So many of the poor and minority students who can currently perform below the 30th percentile in reading skills enter school with academic vocabularies only half the size of the middle class counterparts. So we know that these very low performing readers have difficulty decoding words accurately because they have weak phonic skills and can't read fluently because their sight vocabulary is restricted. And we know from the diagram I showed earlier that one of the reasons their sight vocabulary is restricted is because they don't read, that negative cycle. They have relatively weak vocabularies because they have not been able to read widely during previous school years. They have broad knowledge deficits. And they haven't practiced comprehension strategies because they have limited reading experience and because of their struggle with words. Many of these students have given up on the idea of ever becoming a good reader. One student put it this way, I'm not that good at reading. It takes me a while, and when I'm reading a book, it takes me more than 6 times. And then I still forget what I've read. It's hard for me to keep focused and remember where I was. Even when I remember, I read so slowly, I never finish my work. There are still lots of words I can't pronounce, and I can't remember how to sound out the words. So how are we going to solve this problem? One of the things we need to do is we must teach students, if we want them to become good readers, the knowledge and skills required to read unknown words in text. We have to give them the phonic skills they need to decode these multisyllable words. We need to accurately recognize many thousands of words at a single glance, and that will only happen with lots of opportunities to practice reading words. They need to know the meanings of these words that they encounter in material, and they need to learn how to think about meaning as they work through comprehending text. So you may wonder, do adolescents really need to learn to read in much the same way that young children do? And our best answer to this question at present is yes. You may also wonder what some of the most serious challenges that they face when they are acquiring good reading skills. Number one, many of these students still have difficulty decoding. They don't need to go back and learn to read phonics using phonics the way kindergarten, first, and second graders do, no. But within multisyllable words, many of the phonics elements can still be taught and should be taught. These students have slow and labored reading, and so they need opportunities to practice word, sentence, and paragraph reading fluently. And they lack background knowledge and limited vocabulary, and we have to enhance their knowledge of those areas. So how are we going to go about doing that? The best answer for us right now is it needs to be relentless. In order for students that are older and behind to become accurate and independent readers, we need to encourage, cajole, lead, beg, support, demand, and reward them as broadly and deeply as possible. So I'm going to show you some examples of ways in which we have tried to organize instruction to really promote and enhance reading comprehension for older readers. And I'd like to ask you to take a look at the slide that has a picture of what we call a vocabulary map. And as you look at this vocabulary map, what you'll see is that our goal here is to do more than teach the meaning of one word. What you've probably noticed is that most of the students you work with are missing many, many words. You begin to define a word for them, and they don't understand the words and the definition you're using to define the word. And so you find that filling this vocabulary hole is endless and exceedingly challenging. And so in an attempt to address that problem, one of the things my colleague Deb Simmons and I have done is thought about ways in which we can come up with these big academic vocabulary words. And then we can use those as the host or center word in which we can attach a lot of other words. And so the idea is that students can learn 8 to 10 related words when they learn these big host words. So if you look at the picture, you'll see that the center of the picture has the keyword agriculture. And we would consider agriculture a host or center word. In the unit that we were teaching, this became a very important word to understand a lot of other words, for example, like crops and customs. And you also understand supply of food and other phrases. And so the word agriculture goes in the center of this diagram. And then if you look, you'll see that in addition to the word agriculture, there's a definition, and the definition of agriculture that we provide is one that comes from the text that the students are reading, which is the planting of seeds to grow food. And so you see an illustration of how, at least based on the unit that we were teaching in social studies, a particular farmer is planting seeds to grow food. And then if you look at number 4, if you look at the context for the word, and so we provide 2 examples of context. One is accurate and one is not accurate. So for example, number 1, the town relied on agriculture for their supply of food. That would be an example of an accurate context. Number 2, he chopped down trees with the agriculture. That would be an example of an incorrect use of the word. And then of course there's conversations about that. Then if you look at box number 5, there's word associations. And we talk about words that are related. Remember, again, we like to use these host words like agriculture to teach related words. And in this case, crops and farmer are examples of related words. And hat and customs are examples of words that are not related. And then we give students an opportunity to either work alone or with a partner to write an example that includes a sentence or a definition using that keyword agriculture. And then we provide opportunities for students to use that orally. These vocabulary maps can serve as a center for students' work around other key concepts as well. Another way in which we have focused students on more comprehension-related activities is through collaborative strategic reading, which is a plan for using strategic reading before reading, during reading, and after reading. So if you turn to the slide that says CSR's plan for strategic reading, what you see is what goes on before reading. And what we ask students to do is to brainstorm what they know about the topic, But in addition to that, what we know as teachers is relying on students' background for the topic is insufficient. We also have to add or supplement the brainstorm with additional background information, key ideas, big ideas, and keywords. And we also ask students to predict what they will learn about the topic when they read the passage based on the brainstorm and the additional background knowledge we provide. During reading, we ask students to, we actually have the text divided into multi-paragraph units, and students pause after each of these multi-paragraph units to think about, first of all, whether there are any clicks or clunks. And a click is a word that they know and helps them understand the text. So are there any words in this text that really help you read better or understand better? And a clunk is a word or an idea that you don't understand and that you need help with. So we ask students to go, as they're reading the passage, to identify clicks and clunks. So, and when they identify clunks, we teach them some fix-up strategies for how to go back and better understand what that clunk might be. So we ask them to divide the clunk into parts and to see if any of the parts are ones they know. We ask them to look for key ideas for the sentences they've read. We ask them to reread the sentence before and after and look for clues. And we also ask them, when they need to ask for help. In addition to looking for clicks and clunks in the multi-paragraphs that they read, we ask students, we teach students to get the gist. Now, when we teach students to get the gist, we teach them to identify what the most important who is or the most important what. What is this about? Who is this about? And we also ask them to put in their own words the most important thing about that. And we ask students to do that in a brief amount of words because we don't want them to go on and on about what they think the main idea is. Those two strategies, both clicking and clunking and getting the gist, are ones that we teach during reading. And then the practices we teach after reading include wrap-up. And with wrap-up, there are two parts. The first part to wrap-up is we actually ask students to think of questions that a good teacher would ask about the passage they just read. And we start off by teaching younger students, like third and fourth graders, to ask questions that start with who or what. And then after they become more sophisticated in asking who or what questions, we teach them to ask when questions and where questions. And then eventually, as students become more sophisticated question askers, we teach them to ask why and how questions. We do this systematically until students become proficient by providing them with question stems to get started. So, for example, we might start with a question stem that says, who decided that? And then they just have to finish the question stem. Or, what do you think happened when? And then they just have to finish the question stem, and eventually phasing to the point where students are able to write their own questions. And in fact, as students get more proficient at questions, we have students work in teams in which they are given index-size cards, and they write questions on one side of the card and answers on the other. And this way, they can prepare to ask the class as a whole questions, or students in their small group, and to be the monitors of whether or not the students are adequately answering those questions. Now, you may say, why is it important that students be asking the questions? What we've learned is that when students ask and answer questions, and they know they are going to be accountable for asking and answering questions before reading, they read with better comprehension than when the teacher is responsible for the asking and answering of all of the questions. The last reading comprehension practice that we focus on after reading is identified as review, and it's also considered summarizing or synthesizing. And what we teach students to do is, as they look at their gifs that they developed while they were reading, their main ideas or gifs that we talked about earlier, they take each of the gifs from the multiple paragraphs and they put them together in a summary. And this way, students learn to use the main ideas they generated to develop summaries of their reading. One of the other elements that we think a great deal about, besides the comprehension practices I referred to earlier, are issues related to how we enhance engagement and motivation. We know that there are detailed studies of effective teachers that document that they are powerful motivators. Engaging teachers do something every minute of every hour of every school day to motivate and engage their students. And less engaging teachers actually do much to undermine student motivation, including a tone in the classroom that calls attention to the weak performance of students and really prevents them from feeling like they are a part of a classroom. So one of the things we work on is identifying practices that are associated with engagement and motivation. And we work very hard to help teachers think about the kinds of things they say and do that promote that kind of engagement. So, as a concluding thought, there's no question that improving literacy skills in adolescents and struggling readers is a significant challenge. And there's no question that it involves a lot of professional development, organization, and a relentless focus on the needs of every student. But we do know that poor readers can be taught and can make progress within reading comprehension if the program has all the necessary components and the teacher is well prepared and supported. And the students are given time, sufficiently intensive instruction, and incentives to overcome their reading and language challenges. Given the right approach, students will buy in, they will be interested in reading, and they will succeed. In fact, they'll ask why they were allowed to go so far without being taught to read. One of the examples I have is from a middle school student who was involved in our reading comprehension program and had been more than 4 grade levels behind prior to involvement in the program. And one of the things this student said to me is, what I like most about being able to read and understand is that I now can go down to the cafeteria and rather than wait in line and peer over to determine what the food choices are, I can actually read the offerings ahead of time and make a choice. So we have had a lot of positive responses from students, even older students that many adults perceive as having given up on reading, that they appreciate learning to read and consider it a valuable part of their life. So with that, I'm going to pause and turn it back to you and see what questions and comments and thoughts you have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Vaughn. I do have a question from a 6th through 8th grade literacy coach talking a little bit about students at those grade levels, the middle school grade levels, who are struggling readers and may be 3 to 4 to 5 grade levels actually behind, and discussing the question of what happens in terms, or what is your thoughts on those students that are those many grade levels behind as far as the tiers of instruction, meaning we say according to RTI that they students should get tier one instruction and then intervention on top of that. For those students that are that far behind, there's a feeling, of course, that core instruction may not be so beneficial to them, so should they actually be on a completely different path and may not be included in that tier one instruction?
I think that's a wonderful question. It's a compelling question, and it's a question that everyone is dealing with. And it's a question of appropriateness and fit. And whether I'm confident that the person that asked this question, and it's just such a great question, is wondering, hey, you know, we only have a limited amount of time. How do we use this time and maximize its effectiveness? And is that by keeping the target student who's in multiple grade levels behind in tier one instruction? So let's kind of take this apart. First of all, there's no right answer, but there are a lot of right answers for individual kids. If that student is in a tier one core reading instruction in which there is no reason to believe the student is getting a valuable educational experience, then I think using that time alternately to put them in an intervention that is much more aligned with their needs and provides the opportunity to accelerate that student success is a desirable option. However, what we don't want to do, and I'm confident this person does not have this in mind, but I want to say it anyway, what we don't want to do is take students out of Tier 1 instruction that are benefiting from it, particularly if a classroom teacher is able to help students learn vocabulary, is willing to differentiate instruction so that the text the student is reading is appropriate, and is able to help that student make connections with comprehension practices that are appropriate in the text they can read. But when it comes to issues of word study and fluency, that student who's multiple grades behind is going to have a different kind of instruction than the other students.
Thank you. And Jessica, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and unmute the line so that we can see, because we have a little bit of time, we can see if anybody else has any questions that they may not have sent to the address yet. Dr. Vaughn, is that okay with you?
All attendees have been unmuted.
So if there are any questions, go ahead and ask.
Could I ask a question that's a little bit peripheral but yet related to the topic?
Sure.
Okay. Hi. It's wonderful to hear you, Dr. Vaughn. My name is Cheryl Ward. I'm from the state of Wisconsin. I have a new dear friend in Massachusetts, Sally Grimes. That speaks of you all. And my question is this. We are working very hard in the state of Wisconsin, who has great need to improve reading instruction. And we are actively involved at a state reading panel trying to build awareness in education. And that's ongoing as we speak. And I particularly noted the skill in your presentation today, talking about adolescents and their reading, but giving measure to those that struggle most with decoding and alluding to the importance of foundational skill. We are still finding this enormous disconnect from the decoding foundational and the phonemic skill set as it comes to adolescent reading. And there is a dearth of information, talks, et cetera, on adolescent literacy. And when you are in a whole language or balanced literacy, quote, environment where we're using words like phonemic awareness and others from the National Reading Panel, the fact that we're focusing on comprehension and adolescent literacy, as superb and meaningful as it is really confusing things even more in a state like ours. Curious if I made sense, number one. Number two, what are your thoughts?
Yes, those are really great insights on your part, and thank you for making them clear. Let me see if I can kind of unpack it and then comment on it. First of all, everyone agrees, and it doesn't matter what your conceptual or theoretical background is, everyone agrees that the goal is reading for understanding and reading for learning. No reasonable person has a different goal than that. But where we kind of get mixed up, I think, and trip over each other is how to achieve that goal. And what we know is that with young children, achieving that goal relies on phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, comprehension, and we know that those paths have been pretty clear for kindergarten, first, and second grade. But then as students get older, as you well identified, the emphasis continues to be on comprehension. It doesn't change. But the question is, how do you achieve that goal? Now, for many students who are 2, 3, 4 grade levels behind, they lack inadequate word study knowledge to decode words. It doesn't matter that they're 14 years old. If they lack that, they need that to be taught to them. Now, do they need it to be taught to them exactly the same way it's taught to a 7-year-old? The answer is no. But do the phonics elements change just because they're 15? And the answer is also no. But what we can do is within multi-syllable words, we can show students how to use those same phonics elements in ways that are productive and help them become better readers. So for these students, the path to reading comprehension includes a trail in which they learn these phonics elements. And to deny them that denies them the access they need to reading words, which is the first step in learning to understand what you read. So probably a long answer, but I hope it's somewhat helpful.
No, thank you. It's very helpful. I only wish, and we're going to get you here.
Thank you for that question. Is there another question?
Yes. Dr. Vaughn?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay. I do have a question. And a follow-up from that, and I don't know whether or not you can answer this or not, but I'm working diligently in the state of Wisconsin as well on finding interventions for teaching reading. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to find things for adolescent readers. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for either strategies or programs that may be really effective in reaching adolescent needs in the area of reading decoding.
Yeah, it is a challenge, and it's one we have pushed up our sleeves and taken on. In the last 5 years, I've done 5 randomized clinical trials. I'll make no 6 randomized clinical trials with adolescents, really trying to make a difference in their reading outcomes. And yes, we have taught the students who need it the phonics skills they need, and we have not found that there may be one, but I am not aware of a program that we were able to use without making a lot of modifications. So we kind of teach the phonics skills that students need within the text of multi-syllable words. There's a lot of good programs out there, but I just haven't done a systematic review of each of them, and I can't really comment on them.
Okay. That would be really helpful.
I think it would be helpful. I agree with you.
Thank you.
That's good.
I think we may have time for one final question.
You're probably right.
Right. Yeah. In about 5 years, she'll come out with something. Name it.
I have a question. This is another Wisconsin listener, and this wasn't discussed in the presentation, but there's a slide about brain structures. Can you address that briefly?
Yeah, sure. One of the things we've done in our National Institute of Health study is that we have done brain imaging of the students in our treatment and our comparison conditions. And the person who's really the expert on this is the neuropsychologist, Jack Fletcher. But I know that what he would tell you is that the remediation teachers are actually brain surgeons, because what they do is they actually result in restructuring the brain for the treatment students. It actually looks different after treatment than it did before. So we do get brain imaging changes as a result of the treatment.
Great. I'm glad I asked, because the slide led me to sort of a different idea of how you perceive brain structure and especially dyslexia. So thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Vaughn, very much for speaking with us today. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. Just a reminder, if you have any other questions, you can email them to info@tislal.org. And those questions and answers will be sent out to you and actually directly after this live chat session. Once again, thank you. Yes, the email address?
Yes, please.
Okay, the address is info@tislal.
I-S-L-A-L-A-L.
Let me repeat it again. info@T as in Tom, I as in itch, F as in fly, L as in lion, A as in apple, L as in lion, .org.
Thank you.
Sure. Again, thank you, Dr. Vaughn, for spending your time with us at the Institute for Literacy and Learning. Please remember to check out our website for the recorded version of this session, as well as other sessions recorded by Dr. Joe Torgerson, Dr. Louisa Motz, Dr. Marilyn Adams, and others. I think our phones are unmuted, so could you all join me in giving Dr. Vaughn a round of applause? Thank you, Dr. Vaughn, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.